Hi, I'm Maddie Cox, and this is a queer media episode of Two-Headed Girl. Today with me is someone who joins us for most queer media episodes. Say hi, intrepid friend.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Quinn?
I'm so excited to be here.
So today we are talking about Dimension 20, which is a series of D&D campaigns that airs on this app called Dropout. It's by previously a channel that was College Humor, and everyone that like worked at College Humor, and then it transitioned over to Dropout, where you have to like pay to see things, but you can also access like full episodes of them being filmed playing campaigns on YouTube to get you addicted. And then they ask for your money.
Yeah, and it's the best purchase decision anyone can possibly make. The big thing about Dimension 20 that makes it a little different from a lot of other actual play shows is that it has rotating casts. And so most of the shows are DM'd by the same person, Brennan Lee Mulligan, though that is not always true. They do have guest DMs as well. And there is kind of a quote-unquote main cast, but they also intersperse the main cast seasons with seasons of other cast members from varying parts of the internet, which is super cool. And they also are very discreet seasons. There are a couple of sequel seasons, but whereas a lot of like actual play stuff, it stretches on for years and years in kind of the same set and characters. Everything within Dimension 20 are like, they'd be like, okay, we're going to have this season. It's going to have 18 episodes. Like, that's what it is. And so everything is a lot more digestible, because even though there's a lot of it, if you just want to watch one thing to get into it, it's very accomplishable.
Yeah, it's almost like watching a season of TV. And first off, I would recommend probably skipping this episode if you know nothing about D&D, because we're not going to break down the rules or the nitty-gritty of D&D. We're just going to be talking about our favorite queer characters in different campaigns.
Yes. I wanted to be known that I wanted to pitch this episode 2 years ago when I started watching Dimension 20, but no one in my life watched it. And so I just had to sit here quietly, lying in wait until you got really into it. And then I was like, it's time.
Yeah, I honestly, surprisingly, my entire time at Cards was very, or like while Alex was working at Cards, was very against tabletop games, just because that's me. I always get into stuff like later when it's no longer accessible to me. And over the pandemic, I had a lot of dog house sits to sit there and watch, and a lot of the people I watch dogs for don't have televisions. So I was watching one of their shows. It's called Actually. It's like a little game show. And then recommended in my YouTube feed was Dimension 20. I watched one episode of their first season campaign, Fantasy High. And after that, I was addicted and basically taught myself all the rules of D&D just by watching that campaign.
Yeah, same.
Really? You didn't know? Had you like not played or like learned anything about it before?
No, I'd done a couple of one shots, and I had listened to The Adventure Zone, but The Adventure Zone doesn't actually teach you how to play D&D because they don't know how to play D&D very well. Whereas with Dimension 20, one, it's like a visual experience, so there's a lot more mechanical that you can actually observe and absorb from that. Just for me personally, and then they're also like extremely good D&D players, and so you learn a lot about the game. So yeah, I fully learned all of the rules by watching a lot of Dimension 20.
Actually, I totally forgot about that. I listened to a lot of The Adventure Zone too, but I just, you know, it was just a story. It wasn't like learning the rules. So actually, if you are still listening and have no idea any of the rules of D&D, go watch the first episode of Fantasy High on YouTube and come back, because then you'll know some stuff about Dimension 20 and D&D.
Also, the rules of D&D do not matter for what we're talking about today, because the mechanics of D&D have nothing to do with how gay you are, but that's what we care about here today.
There is so much gay to cover that I don't know if we are going to get to it all in one episode.
Absolutely not.
All right, since this is your realm and you wanted to pitch it first, would you like to start us off?
Great. So I guess I would like to start our conversation with a bit of a general overview of the queer characters in Dimension 20. And I'm not just going to like list all of their names. I did write down all of the names that I could think of for even just player characters and major NPCs who are queer. But it just, trust me that it's a lot of them. But what I really want to talk about in an opening conversation is just the fact that there are so many and that it is so normal for people to be queer in the various worlds of Dimension 20. And I think that there's something that it almost like it conditions your brain in a whole new way, because there's so much in mainstream media that while there are increasing number of queer shows and movies, there's still like, for the typical mainstream show, queerness is still not going to be the default thing. It's still going to be something that's like seen as abnormal in some way. Whereas in Dimension 20, it is so normal that it is like completely unremarkable. And it's such a fascinating culture to exist in.
I just tried to count them all, and I like generously on the low side, I think like 50. I think there's at least 50 characters. And that's not even all the, like, side non-player characters.
They are everywhere.
So this isn't your, like, typical token gay. This is basically, like, your token straights.
Yeah. I really appreciate, like, the... some of the campaigns are basically just, like, gay-straight alliances. And then some of the campaigns, they just, like... actually, there literally aren't straight people here. This is an all-sexually fluid universe.
Yeah, I love it, honestly.
I guess I just want to say that before we get into specifics, I just want to, so I don't forget, generally give a shout out to Orion Black, because they were the creative director of Dimension 20 from like very early 2021 through late 2022. And that is like, I started watching Dimension 20 a little bit into 2021. And so I feel like this, the era of the show that they created and like continues on, even though they're not actively working on it anymore, is like the gayest and best it's ever been. And it just continues heading in that direction. And so before we get into like all the specifics of different characters that we love and everything, I just wanted to give a shout out to actual human person, Orion Black, who I know did so much work on creating all of the atmosphere that I just discussed of like this culture of queerness that I think is really valuable for the show to have.
I feel like this is a great escape, like, because there's so much queerness and that's not like something you see often in most traditional media. It's like such a great way to escape into just a universe of queerness and not feel like the odd person out, to feel like you are the norm. Like, that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in seasons where it's like, it's not that every character is always queer, it's just that it is completely unremarkable that people are queer.
Exactly. Yeah, it's great. I love it. I would say like the token queer maybe like starts off in like Fantasy High, but then from there it evolves into like queer characters are unremarkable and they're just there, you know. It's not like a big deal. Like, it's not your traditional I have to come out because I'm gay every single campaign, because man, that would take up a lot of time.
That's just the whole, every season there's one episode where it's just everyone coming out.
Just 3 hours of like sitting around like an AA meeting but people coming out.
Well, I guess we definitely have to start with Fantasy High. It is the first season that they produced. It has our like main Intrepid Heroes cast. And if you haven't seen it, it's basically the premise of Fantasy High is it's like a John Hughes movie, but it takes place in a fantasy world. So they're all like, lots of them are like elves and demons and stuff, and they have magical powers. But also they're teenagers at a high school. And so Fantasy High is, I think that in this conversation, it really is distinct from the other seasons. Because one was the first one, and so our players are still really figuring things out. Like, these are their first try at characters within the Dimension 20 world. And so, but then it's also, I think the atmosphere of it is like, even though it's a fantasy world, things in Dimension 20 mirror the real world more than they do in most of the other seasons. Cause it's like, oh, it's still supposed to represent like kind of like an 80s kind of a modern high school experience. They keep changing their mind.
It's like Back to the Future-esque, I feel.
But so that, like, some of the characters have like homophobic parents and stuff like that, but it still very much exists in the, like, we're not Christian. We worship the sun god Helio. It's only a metaphor for Christianity.
Yeah, the metaphors are very, like, this is the most, like, basic and straightforward of the seasons. So, like, as far as D&D, I feel like it's a pretty, like, almost like a pretty typical, like, D&D type characters, and that's why you could, like, get into it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very accessible.
And I feel like briefly we should explain that the Intrepid Heroes are the cast of six people that are the improv actors that play all of the characters in the main campaign.
Yeah, so DM Brennan Lee Mulligan, which means that he kind of creates the world and runs the story and plays every character who's not one of our main characters. And then you have Emily Axford, Brian Murphy, Lou Wilson, Zach Oyama, Ali Beardsley, and Siobhan Thompson.
There you go. Thank you.
I've spent a lot of time with these people.
Me too, but I only know their first names.
That's so funny. Yeah, and then, so when we start out with Fantasy High, in the beginning of the show, there's not a ton of queerness, except for Love My Life, Ali Beardsley, who showed up on set and was like, I'm going to make a very sort of, it's like a very standard kind of like teenage lesbian, grew up in the Christian church and like now has to find her way into a queer relationship, except also she like literally has the power of God because she's a cleric and all of this stuff. So there's a lot of humor that's part of that arc.
I feel like to me that was the most like basic, like finding your queer identity in high school kind of thing, like the most rooted in a lot of real life experiences.
Yeah, for sure. And then as Fantasy High goes on, because they do two full seasons of this one, you have so many more characters who joined the GSA that is the Fantasy High universe.
Oh, I just want to say really quick that, like, for me, I was really surprised, like, first watching it, that there were a lot of queer characters. Like, the second that the character of Kristen, who is, like, you know, part of the church and has, like, a gay panic when she meets her future werewolf or lycan, I guess, girlfriend Tracker, like, I knew that the second they met, like, their first interaction, I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to be, like, a lesbian couple together, 100%.
100%,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and then I was, like, straight up, you know, questioning your sexuality, being part of a religion, meeting a hot girl in a bar, like, and having that gay panic reaction. I was like, 100%, they're going to be gay for one another. But I thought, like, that was just, like, the token thing, and that's how it would continue through all of the campaigns, you know, like, we gotta make sure we fit in the gays. But there are so many more, especially in season two, and I know that's where your favorite characters come in, so.
Yeah, so in season two of Fantasy High, we meet one of my favorite characters who's ever been made in any media, which is a half Phoenix woman named Ida Eggfort, who's an autistic librarian on a pirate ship. It's great. She's just the most character. She's just so good. I love her so much. The Intrepid Heroes meet her, and she's supposed to be just kind of like a one-off NPC. Brennan was like, I made a fun, quirky librarian character. And then all of the players were like, I'm adopting her. And so they end up bringing her along for a lot of adventures. And then one of our main characters, Fig, who is played by Emily Axford, who previously to this point has never had any real romantic relationships, but she has this like running... Emily is the funniest person alive, besides perhaps Lou Wilson, the other funniest person alive. But so she has this running bit with the character that started off like... She didn't intentionally make this bit, but it kind of like escalated into this. And then she fed into it because they're comedians. They love to escalate. But that she like pretends to be older than she is because she has a lot of illusion magic and like kisses older men, which in context of the very funny, not serious bits that they're doing is like, oh, that's funny because this is an actual adult woman. She's not a teenager in real life. But then like they take it a little bit more seriously as the show goes on of like, that is really messed up behavior. And it's like very not healthy for a person to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But she has all this, like, she's all wrapped up in this complex about what it means to truly know her and being afraid that people won't like her if they actually know her. And then she meets Ida, who's the most straightforward person ever and is just like, really likes Fig because Fig is so social and like outgoing and is really cool to her and like is like really happy to like explain stuff to her that she doesn't understand immediately and all of this stuff. And so they bond pretty quickly and then they fall in love and it's incredible. And it's just like two very awkward like teenage girls who have a lot of weird parental issues and don't really have a lot of normal romantic relationship connections because one of them is afraid of intimacy and the other one grew up on a pirate city. And then they find each other and they like, they're perfect. Like they're literally twin flames because they both have fire powers.
Gay.
And even though they're very different, they complement each other in this perfect way. And I feel really normal about them.
Oh, yeah, I can totally tell. I love them, too. And I love that both the relationships in Fantasy High, Kristen and Tracker, and Fig and Ida are, like, very rooted in what it would be like to have a first girlfriend, basically. The teenage experience of figuring out your sexuality and how to, like, navigate those relationships and things like that. And I was super shocked. Like, I did not expect Fig to be bi. It came out of left field for me as much as it did for Emily playing Fig, I think.
Yeah, it's so fun. It's like, I have no idea what Emily Axford's real life sexuality is.
She's bi.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, she came out as bi in one of her podcast episodes with her husband, Nadpod.
Wow. Well, that's nice. Okay, so that's cool. I did not know what her sexuality was, but it's because there's so much in this show that it's like not that relevant. Because I think this goes back to like the culture that is created on Dimension 20, where it really feels like all of the actors, regardless of their sexuality, are really open to developing relationships in their characters for what will be best for that character.
Definitely.
I don't know, but it's like clearly that Emily was like, this is a really interesting connection that my character has, and this like feels like a very natural progression that like Fig would fall in love with this weird bird girl. And she was right, and it's perfect.
Do you think they like talk about, you know, because obviously they talk about like character development like before they film stuff. Do you think they like discuss that, or that was like really on the spot?
I don't know. I've watched a bit of behind the scenes discussion of this, mostly in that there's a sort of a companion show that they release called Adventuring Party, where after every episode of the show, the cast like chats about the previous episode for like 20, 30 minutes. And they weren't doing that during this time, but they started doing it over Zoom in the pandemic for the season that aired immediately after this one. So they had a lot of conversation about Fantasy High season 2 because a lot of people had questions about it. Anyway, so my understanding is that like a lot of the stuff with Ida was like very natural, because as I referenced earlier, like Brennan didn't even tend for her to be an ongoing character. And so my understanding is that I know that Emily wanted to like develop Fig further. Emily is the kind of person who always has, she's always like, what's my arc gonna be? Like, she's really looking for those storytelling beats and how she can develop her characters over the course of a season. But as far as I know, I don't think any of those specific things were previously discussed. I think that these are just really, really good improv people who were able to make that smooth.
Yeah, because I feel like personally, I don't know, I feel like Kristen, Ellie playing Kristen was always going to be a lesbian just because that's how they identified in the first campaign, you know? And so I kind of almost like always saw that coming because it was their first campaign, and it was their first time playing a character, so it's easier to get into that by drawing off your own life.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's really cool. I haven't watched all of the adventuring parties for the old campaign, so I kind of had no reference point for that, so thank you.
Yeah, I watched all the ones for Crown of Candy because, like I said, it was the first one they were doing that. And so they answer a lot of questions about previous seasons and Fantasy High stuff, too. And I'm like, yes, tell me everything.
We're talking mostly about the Intrepid Hero main cast campaigns.
Yeah, that definitely, I think, is going to be the focus just because that is a lot of what we know the best. But there are definitely a lot of examples, good examples from side campaigns. In fact, we do definitely have to give a shout out here to The Seven, which takes place in the same universe as Fantasy High, but has a different cast playing different characters. And The Seven has one of the most fleshed out trans storylines in Dimension 20. There's a couple different, like...
Well, now I have to watch it.
Well, yeah. There's a couple different trans player characters over the course of Dimension 20, and there's like people who are NPCs and everything. But it's Unsleeping City, Misfits in Magic, and The Seven all have like specific arcs with trans characters. Those would be like the highlights that I would pick for that. And it's a really, really cool character.
Yeah, I've only... watched most of the main campaigns except for Fae & Flowers. That's the only non-campaign I've watched. So Pete is the Pete from The Unsleeping City is the only trans character that I know. But I knew there were a bunch more, but I just haven't gotten to that part yet because it's a lot of hours of watching D&D.
Yeah. Do you actually want to jump to talking about Pete for a minute?
Yeah. So The Unsleeping City, he is a trans character in The Unsleeping City, and The Unsleeping City is a main Intrepid Hero campaign where it's basically like a magical underground city in New York.
Not literally underground.
Well, some of it is.
I guess some of it is, yeah.
Kind of like a magical parallel universe, New York.
Yeah, it's like all of those fantasy worlds where it's like, oh, you become awakened and you can see all of the magic that's actually all around you. It's very that vibe, urban fantasy stuff.
It's a really good one. I like it a lot. It was my second after Fantasy High because I also felt it was very rooted in like a little bit of reality to grasp onto, you know?
Yeah, and this is the second main cast season that they produced.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of watched them in order. And I gotta say, I was not expecting a trans character, so I was pleasantly surprised. And he is my favorite character arc, but he is not my favorite character and not someone that I can like definitely relate to other than being trans, because his personality is very, I want to say he's like very typical trans, and I don't want it to sound like it, that's just not my experience. Like, he's someone that was kicked out of his house young for being trans, and like, you know, doesn't really have any monetary stability, has an addiction, and I think unfortunately that's something that's very common for younger people or people in general in the trans community. And it was really nice to see it represented, for sure, because he deals with like a lot of difficult things, like overcoming addiction and being reconnected with his father, and like having to see a doctor that isn't like a professional surgeon or doctor in a main hospital because he doesn't have like the funds. And that is such a good encapsulation of, you know, a lot of the trans community. And I love that as his arc goes on, it just becomes easier for him, and he becomes, when finding friends and having that community around him, he ends up being able to like really thrive as a trans person, or just as a person in general. He begins to really thrive, and I feel like see how important he is and value himself as a person. And I'm not saying that like he's not my favorite character, because I don't like him. I'm just saying my experience is very different, but I love what he brings to the universe, and how, and just like the progression of his like journey and struggles.
Pete is such a fun character. Like, everything that you're talking about is like these very serious aspects of his trans storyline are so real, but also, have you considered that he's a very funny man?
He wears a cowboy hat and no shirt, yeah, and just like randomly gives drugs to children.
That he tattooed a word spelled wrong on his knuckles. He's so chaotic. And a lot of the arc of the two seasons of The Unsleeping City is him like getting more stability in his life, but he never loses that edge of chaos that he has to him, which I think is very funny.
I think that's why, like, when I was watching it, I was trying so hard to be like, well, this obviously should be my favorite character because he's trans. But that chaoticness is something that I feel like Allie brings to all of their characters at yes, different levels. And I just, like, I am not chaotic. I am the opposite of chaotic. And I love him and his representation and like his storyline, but I was like, I am not this person. Like, I wanted so hard to like identify with him really well, and he is kind of just like you were saying, like my entertainment, because he is so chaotic.
Allie has really been stretching themselves recently to play more grounded or like organized characters, and sometimes you can see the physical pain on their face from preventing themselves from making the most chaotic choice in a situation. Like, oh god, no, I'm supposed to be the responsible one. But
spoilers for the newest. Oh, sorry, spoilers for the newest campaign. They're playing a gay man, and I could tell how much that like, chaotic wise, they wanted to like hit on Scheherazade, like so much.
Allie the person was like, I want to hit on this fictional character, but my old gay man character would not do that.
Exactly. You could like see the like the physical having to hold themselves back from like being like flipping their character around and being like, yes, this woman is so hot, I just wanna, yeah.
One really fun thing with Pete, too, is I've also, in some behind-the-scenes things, who knows at this point, I've watched too much, but Allie was talking about playing Pete, and they were like, yeah, so I played Pete before I had top surgery. And so the first scene is Pete, like, post-top surgery, and he's, like, rip-roaring, ready to go. And they were like, I didn't really understand at the time that that's not how anything works. And so he, like, gets his tits removed, and then he's, like, immediately ready to go fight the forces of evil. And then later they were like, oh, no, I was wrong.
What? Yeah, what campaign is it? Is it Crown of Candy right after Allie got top surgery and just can, like, barely move to do any of, like, the dice rolling and stuff?
Yeah, and then there, I think, I don't remember if it's in Crown of Candy or in Fantasy High Season 2, but at one point they, oh, I think it is in Fantasy High Season 2. They, Lou makes them laugh so hard that they pop a stitch.
Yeah. So even playing D&D can be dangerous after top surgery, kids. Yeah, it's so funny how Allie has really played, like, the gambit of every letter of the queer alphabet. And the Timothy, like, Mother Goose, their newest character, seems so basic for some reason.
They're back to the drawing board. So Allie has played, let me see if I can list them in order. So a lesbian, a trans man, an asexual peppermint boy, a non-binary dog.
Didn't see that one.
Yeah, they're all animals. It's they're all anthropomorphic animals, but yeah. And then back to a cis lesbian, and that were, I guess I don't know for sure. I guess I don't think they ever specify whether or not Margaret's cis or not, so I don't know. But a lesbian, and then an old gay man.
I would say the old gay man is the least chaotic, to me anyway, from what I've seen.
They try so hard to make Margaret, like, a very organized person, and they do not always succeed because Allie's natural nature sometimes takes over. But, yeah, I really, every time they announce a character, it is a different letter of the alphabet, and I'm like, thank God, I can always count on Allie Beardsley.
I know, I love it so much, and that... The thing is, that doesn't even, like, they account for one of the queer characters in each campaign. So you mentioned Allie playing Margaret in one of the campaigns, who I agree, I think, is a cis lesbian. And it's a campaign where they're, like, it's basically like the show Firefly by Joss Whedon. It's, like, space pirates. And Margaret is just, like, a business person renting out a space on this, like, rusty old clunker of a ship called The Worst, that is a hot dog. And that's listed under one of my, like, gay tropes, actually. I love Margaret. I think that she's hilarious. But, like, from Fantasy High, Kristen and Tracker, definitely U-Haul lesbians.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the tropes that I have listed as like, what characters that are queer fall into the traps of tropes. And then Margaret and her business partner, her friend from college, just her friend, doing the whole, like, enemies to lovers thing. And, like, you see it coming right from the beginning. And just every time Brennan says the word friend, it's just, I love it so much.
It's so funny. Because the Allie leans into it really hard every time. They're like, yeah, you know, my friend who I have normal friend feelings for.
Yeah. And it's just, of course, like, the going to a summit together in college and, like, staying together, doing business together.
Business.
You know, drifting apart as friends. Yeah, business. Drifting apart as friends, but having matching necklaces.
Yeah, that's never been gay.
Yeah, that they wear all the time to, you know, and call each other and freak out on the phone when they talk. As just, as much as it is a trope, the enemies to lovers, Allie plays that so well, too. I don't know if there's a character that I have seen that Allie plays that they don't do well. Margaret is one of my favorites, actually. I have too many favorites.
This is every time I try to think about, like, who's my favorite Dimension 20 character or whatever, or play or whatever. I just, like, oh, I'm like, oh, yeah, this person. But oh, and this other person. Oh no, I forgot. I got like it just cascades immediately.
Yeah, I tried to keep it away from NPCs and pick main characters, and I could only narrow it down to three, honestly.
Yeah, this is a hard part for me because I'm like, okay, I have loyalty to Ida as my favorite NPC, but then I've sometimes you just gotta pick someone and stick with it, but I just can't pick in terms of player characters. Everybody is just so good.
I think honestly, favorite and someone I relate to, Fig, because that was, because I am bisexual, and like that was my, I don't know why I said it like that.
Like it was like a secret.
I am bisexual. Yeah. Hey, I'm bisexual. And that was like my experience in high school when I found out that I wanted to, you know, date women when I still identified as or was a cis woman. I Fig finding Ida and just kind of like stumbling into it and realizing that she's bisexual. I think that's why Fig is one of my favorite characters, because like the first half of my life, like that's like who I was, basically, like how I identified and experienced things. So that's definitely why she's in one of my top three.
The top characters in Dimension 20 that I identify with are actually Ida and Adine, and that really tells you everything you need to know about me as a person. And those are actually unrelated to sexuality. Like, I don't really feel like I share my sexuality journey with either of them. Just as people, I relate to them.
Do you want to, since you've described who Ida is, do you want to briefly describe who Adine is?
Adine is another one of our main characters from Fantasy High, played by Siobhan Thompson, and she is an elven wizard who comes from like a really mean family. That's not the part I identify with. I want to be so clear. But she's like very studious, but struggles because she has anxiety problems. And thus far in the Fantasy High universe, she does not actually have any kind of disclosed sexuality. And like Siobhan Thompson's like said, this is a traumatized teenage girl. Like, I'm not worried about her sexuality yet, which I think is very fair. So maybe if they ever make more Fantasy High, she might have a relationship arc. But thus far, it's a return null on there.
I gotta say my top one, Fig, from relating to her. And then I guess Margaret, yeah, just because I love how entertaining she is. Like, everything in that campaign, almost everything Margaret does makes me laugh. Like, just, you know, one of the best moments is during that one, there's one really intense battle where they're, like, fighting a bunch of people trying to get back to their ship, and Margaret is banking on their phone the whole time and being like, hey, watch out, to give the help action to the other PCs, and is just worried about saving their money. And that's one of my favorite episodes. I just love it so much.
And her turns are really effective. Sometimes you got to do some online banking.
They are.
But the other player character that I wanted to make sure we talked about is Riz, played by Brian Murphy. And Riz is really great because he is an asexual and a romantic character, and he has like a really cool arc about this. And it is another thing that kind of starts out as a joke and like a comedy bit where he's like, why is everyone so obsessed with kissing? And then like it gets turned into a whole thing and like the joke escalates. But there's like in a lot of other things from this show, there's a very serious kernel of truth to that. And then as Murph and Brennan explore that character as season two goes on, they really delve into this idea of like Riz not wanting a romantic or sexual relationship and feeling very insecure about what his place in the world is going to be because of that, because he is afraid that his friends, as it is put near the end of that season, like being afraid that all of the people that he loves will find people that are more important to them because they will all find romantic partners and then he will be left alone. And so he has this whole arc of the season of like figuring this out about himself, and also like figuring out that one, that it's okay and it's a normal thing, and that also that he can count on his friends because they love him very much, regardless of the fact that like he might not ever want to have a like one romantic partner the way that they do.
Riz is a little goblin boy who loves his detective work and doesn't need to love anything else.
He loves his briefcase and his best friend, Fabian Seacaster. That's all he needs. And in the content of Fantasy High, Murph and Brennan, neither one of them ever says Arrow Ace out loud. But that is like the arc of the character that they intend. But in an adventuring party for the Seven, which is like filmed significantly after this point, Brennan does mention like, oh yeah, like Riz, who's Arrow Ace. And so I don't know if it like in the moment they just didn't solidify that as much, because Fantasy High season 2 was also filmed live, and so there wasn't necessarily as much polish as it has in the other seasons, but at some point on the line they clearly decided to like formalize that identity for him, and make that explicit in canon. But there are other characters in Dimension 20 who like say that they are asexual, like within the canon of the show itself, which we're talking so much about like queer characters and how uncommon it is to have like this culture where it's so normal. There is almost zero asexual representation out in mainstream media. So the fact that like Dimension 20 has even just like the few characters that it does, and like increasing in number, they're everywhere. No, but I just think that's really important to mention and to celebrate, because I think that's a very cool thing that the show is able to do, especially with like In Fae of Flowers, where you have like ace players playing ace characters, which is super cool.
So actually on my list of favorite characters is one from Fae and Flowers named Andhera.
Yes.
who is ace, and as you mentioned, as is his the person who plays him, Omar, is also ace. And I was not expecting to, because I've never watched a side campaign, I was not expecting to be down with like the high mystical like fairies, a court of fame flowers, like it's very what do you call it, like Mr. Darcy type.
It's like Regency, but also they're all fairies.
Yeah, it's very Pride and Prejudice, but with fairies and goblins and things like that. A very high fantasy. And I was not expecting to like it. I went in being like, I want to watch because this is what everyone's watching and I want to be a part of the community right now. But I was like, I don't know about this. And like, I instantly identified with Andhera. Not because I'm ace, but because he is a very socially awkward soft boy. In every interaction he has, he makes awkward. And that is just me, like, to a T. I was like, all right, I'm down for this now.
I love Andhera so much. I have to say, Fae and Flowers is one of my top seasons that Dimension 20 has made so far. I think it is phenomenal.
And, me too.
Oh my god, Andhera is so good. And he also, like, in the scene when they're effectively coming out as ace in to the other characters, I believe he says, my mouth has been writing checks that my body can't cash, which is the funniest way to say, I know I've been flirting, but I am actually asexual.
I love him so much. I don't know. He is just he's really funny and very awkward, and like really comes into his own during the campaign, and exactly, like, coming out was just, that was like the best way to come out. I don't know, the campaign is filled with, I think I love every character, like every player character I am,
yes,
a fan of.
They're, oh my god, they're all so good, and they all like have their own unique queer love story.
They are all a letter of the alphabet somewhere.
It's beautiful.
It really is. I was going to say, oh no, not Emily, but Emily plays Lady Chirp Featherfowl, who is surprisingly a lesbian. We're all of a sudden surprised. Like, we think that she is looking for a man to marry, and then a secret is revealed that she's married to a human woman back in the other world, and they have like a half bird baby. I don't know. I can't explain that. but every character is queer. I think, right? Every player character.
Yeah, my understanding of the world of Fae and Flowers is because they're all like fairies of the high court, is it feels like a very sexually fluid society. Like, it seems like that there is just, it's just completely open, like anyone could hook up with anyone. Like, there's doesn't seem to be any kind of limitations on sexuality, and it's not something that's really discussed at all in the show, in terms of like, oh, who's attracted to, like, who are you attracted to or whatever, except for Inhera clarifying that he is not sexually attracted to anyone, which I think is because like everyone else is just kind of generally pan.
Yeah, you're right. Not that totally went over my head, but I was just so invested in the story, and like by that point of watching the amount of Dimension 20 I had, I don't even think I had eventually become so inducted to there just being like a queer atmosphere and queer characters that I didn't even notice that it's just a whole sexually fluid universe, because I was just like, well, yeah, of course everything's like this.
This season really unleashed Lou Wilson, because in all previous seasons, he tends to play characters who either like don't have a lot going on romantically, or like he has a character who has like an ex-wife and they have this relationship that they rekindle. Like, it's all like very kind of serious or like not a primary part of his character. And then he got to this season and he's like full heel turn pansexual player, and he's just out here, he's hooking up with everybody, he is actively cheating and lying, he does not feel bad about it. It's an incredible character choice.
He is taking all the chaos on his shoulders.
He said all you people are falling in love and someone needs to be doing bad things.
Yeah. Bad things with everyone of every gender.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say normally he plays a very, like, I was going to say, like, the straight man and mean it as, like, the serious guy, but also a straight man. It works for both.
Yeah. But in this season, we do have, so we have our, Emily has a NPC wife off screen, and then Lou is playing this, like, player. But then the other four end up having really beautiful PC romances, and it's not super common in Dimension 20 or really like a lot of actual play for players to have develop relationships between each other, because that is a really intense thing to do. Sometimes it takes a lot of trust, it takes a lot of like work on the story to make sure that you're doing that well, because also it's like if you start like quote-unquote like start a relationship with an NPC and you decide that it's not serving the story well, you can just like leave that NPC in the next town, you know what I mean? But it's like when you start something with another player character, you have to like take it very, very seriously, because they are going to be at the table for the rest of the season no matter what. So we don't get a ton of those throughout the series, but we do get them here. We get two of them, and they're both incredible. And I also believe, like, I know at least, so Brennan is a player on this, because Abria Iyengar, who's incredible, is our DM for this season. And then Oscar Montoya, who I previously saw on an HBO show, and then he showed up here and I was like, oh my God. Like, and so Brennan is playing KP Hobb, who is like a goblin captain. And then Oscar is playing Delosa de la Rue, who is the master of ceremonies for the Bloom, which is like the big event that they're all at. And I know that they did not plan to have a PC romance between the characters before the start of the show. That wasn't something they were thinking about, but that it like very naturally developed over the course of their characters interacting, which makes me want to cry because they have such a beautiful love story.
They do. Also, we should mention that Rue is an owl bear They're disguised as... Oh, I totally forgot what they're disguised as.
They're disguised as like an elf, I think. It's like a very traditionally beautiful, very human figure. And then it's like, oh no, I'm actually an owlbear, a very stylish owlbear.
Right, like a water fae, like person looking water fae. And then they come out, like literally reveal themselves to be a very fancy owlbear.
I love that. Oscar really looked around and said, in a universe we've created where being queer is completely normal in everyone's pan, how do I still come up with a beautiful coming out metaphor? And he was like, my trans owlbear character is literally hiding their true self. Beautiful.
I said I have my top three characters, and then I would add Rue as my fourth, just because I really, their coming out as trans is like the coming out that I most related to, because I feel like I had already, because there's like a double coming out. They come out as this is who I really am as an owlbear, and then like this is my sexuality, as, or that's like how I took it, and I want to be accepted for who I really am. And because I had like two coming outs, basically, I was like, that's how I like fell all in on Rue and Hobbs' relationship, is because I was actually really not into their character until they revealed themselves to be an owlbear. So
yeah. And then you have this blossoming romance between two people who feel really, really out of place in their home courts, but they find each other and they choose each other. I love story,
which is another good queer illusion, because they both feel very out of place and then find one another. And it's so sweet and also so gay.
So gay. And then, of course, we have Aunt Hera and Binks. We are doing so many spoilers for Court of Flame Flowers, but that's okay. People are not listening if they're not interested in Dimension 20.
Also, at the top of the show notes, I'll put like a spoiler. Yeah, no one's going to go this far if they don't like it.
Yeah. So Binks, we haven't mentioned yet, is played by Serena Marie, who's also just stunning. She's another one that was like, she was originally playing a character called Gwendolyn Thistlehop, and she was like very quiet, and I was like, I don't know this person, like I wasn't sure. And then they were like, oh, my character's wearing a disguise and their name is actually Binks, and then I was like, oh my god, this is incredible. So there was another like literal physical revelation of like hiding your true self, and another place where this is someone who had a loving home and it was taken away from them. And then we have Andhera, who is someone else who, again, like feels very, very out of place in his home court and doesn't really have a place there. And these two people find each other. And once again, like they make their home with each other. And it's also so important to note that they are also like best friends with Hob and Rue, which I think is another really important aspect of like all of these queer relationships, is they're not only finding these romantic relationships, but they are also finding this like larger queer family structure that they can all support each other.
It is just like one big queer happy family.
It really is.
I don't think there's any better way to describe it than that. One big queer happy family. It's definitely my top two campaign. No, it might be my top one. There's just so much to love about everything that's included in like the queer culture of Dimension 20 that it's so hard to pin down what is my favorite, because there's so much good representation. I don't think there's ever a moment in the queer representation where I thought, well, that's not right, or like that's like typical of what they would do in media, like, you know, kill one of the queer characters off and make it a tragedy or something like that. But I don't think that ever happens. There was never a moment where I like groaned and I was like, ugh, this is just, why would you do this? You know, like in prestige TV or anything like that, how you'll have that like token queer or whatever, and then something tragic will happen to them and they won't get to like live out their lives. Their storyline won't be fleshed out. It'll just be to make sure you check that box and include that character. And honestly, I don't think there's any campaign that I've seen where I've like felt that at all.
Yeah, and I think that really speaks to how many queer people are making and playing these characters. Because I know I said the whole thing earlier about, like, you do have the straight players in this game who are developing queer relationships at different points because it's, like, natural for their characters. But so many of these player characters in, like, all of these side campaigns and everything and people behind the camera are queer. And so they're able to bring these authentic voices to these experiences. And then you have so much going on with Brennan playing everyone's girlfriend and boyfriend because he is the DM playing all the NPC. And Brennan's a cishet man, so like this isn't about him, but he is someone who like does the work to make sure he's doing a good job and to make sure that he's giving like these queer characters like loving relationships in return. That is like in some ways is kind of the bare minimum. I'm like, yeah, queer people are people. They are just like everyone else in the game. But that's so not normal everywhere else that it feels special.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you think Brennan is the one who has to do like the most research, since he's like, I feel like he's I know he's not the only like straight cis white man, but just I feel like he's the one who probably has to do like the most, maybe not, maybe he knows like every alphabet of the queer or every letter of the queer alphabet, and like maybe he knows all of that stuff, but I wonder, like, because I haven't seen so much behind the scenes stuff, like the fact that they are so accurate in their representation and like so tactful with everything. I wonder how much like time and research goes into that.
Well, I know that Dimension 20 does work with a lot of consultants, like sensitivity consultants and like professional consultants from different identity groups, like because Brandon is like a cishet white guy who's playing, who like through the necessity of making a diverse world is going to be playing a lot of characters who are not from the same background as him. And so I know this is something that Dimension 20 does, is employs a lot of people to make sure that he's accurately representing them, which is a cool thing to do and to pay people for. So that's great. I also know that like Brennan's background is writing the webcomic strong female protagonist with Molly Ostertag, so like this is he's born and raised in all of this. Like I know that he has a strong background in like feminist writing, and he also was raised by Elaine Lee, who is the person who created Starstruck, which is what one of their which is the Starstruck season is based in this existing IP that his mom actually made. And that's not like necessarily that relevant. Lainley's just super, super cool. And so I'm not surprised that someone raised by her is also cool.
That's true. Yeah. I totally forgot about that. Like it's just, everything is so wonderful. I wish more TV was like Dimension 20. Like I wish there were more places that were just as accessible to escape to basically their like queer utopia that they have.
Yeah. I just really love Dimension 20. That's the end of the sentence.
I couldn't tell.
But no, I feel like for me, it is such perfect escapism. And the fundamental reason for that is because even when they have, sometimes the plots get like very intense. But at the end of the day, it is a group of seven friends playing a game together. And so no matter what, there is still this atmosphere of like, these people are hanging out and having a good time. And that's what I want all of my media to represent to me. And so for me, it's like the inherent queerness of Dimension 20 feels so natural because, like, when I am hanging out and having a good time, it is a queer space. And so, of course, like, this show that I watch of people hanging out and having a good time is also a welcoming queer space. And it's like, it wouldn't be what it is to me if it wasn't for that.
Exactly. I cannot put it any better because I feel the same way. It's not something that we're unhealthily obsessed with at all. I don't think so. It's definitely not something we could talk about for like 3 hours, no.
My partner doesn't watch Dimension 20, so I have a group chat with Maddie and Alex that's exclusively dedicated to talking about it.
I did not think Alex would like it, and then they got so mad at me. They were like, why did you not share this with me sooner? How could you think I would not like this? And to be fair, Fantasy High is not their favorite, but you gotta start somewhere. So,
yeah. That's the thing, is like, you know, they're all different genres and characters, and I genuinely think there is something for everyone. And I mean, this is just an ad for Dropout now, but I feel comfortable with that. Dropout has lots of other good shows. You mentioned actually earlier. There's lots of really fun shows on Dropout. It's like $6 a month. It's genuinely the best streaming service that money can buy. Like, in terms of bang for your buck, unmatched.
I agree. And sponsor us. No, not really. is there anything in the world of Dimension 20 that we did not cover? Well, I mean, there's a lot that we didn't cover, but that you are not satisfied with before we head off and do other things.
The only thing I want to mention is someone I didn't get to mention in the episode, is Erica Ishii, who is a very common recurring guest player, in a lot of the seasons. And I really just want to say that they're very cool and hot, and all of their characters are really fun and queer. And I just, like, I just couldn't let this episode end without giving her a shout out. So what's up? Call me.
And on that note, that has been another queer media episode of Two Headed Girl. If you like what you heard, you can head on over to our Patreon at twoheadedgirlfm, patreon.com, and or our Instagram or our Twitter. And Quinn, would you like to tell people where you could be found or where you want to be found before we...
You can find me on Instagram at quinsterose and nowhere else.
Nowhere else. That's it. That's the only place you exist.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on and talking about queer media again. I am sure that you will be back for another queer media episode.
As long as things are gay, I'll be watching them. You feel the same.